With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Welcome to the 20th episode of The Comic Show on Monkeys Fighting Robots. This week, we're talking about Moon Knight issue 188, the Marvel Legacy must-read from last week. And then we also have The Batman Who Laughs, the final installment of the Dark Knights saga. I'm your host, Anthony Composto. I'm also the editor of the comic book section on Monkeys Fighting Robots. Joining me in the conversation is my co-host, co-founder of MonkeysFightingRobots.com, Matthew Sardo.
Anthony, how's it going, my friend?
Oh, it's going so good for me. Less so for you. You seem depressed about the books we have to talk about this week, but
I'm depressed.
I'm
depressed after reading those books. Those are the two most depressing books ever that we're going to talk about. And if you like this show, you people out there in the interwebs listening with your headphones on right now, if you like the show, subscribe on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher. There's multiple places. You're a nerd. You know where to subscribe from, so you get every episode. It's awesome. The biggest thing that we love doing the show is the feedback. Feedback is very welcome, and when we get a comment or a tweet, you know, like, we get little goosebumps. Like J-Lo would say, we get goosies. It's the best. And also, just like, tell us what books you're reading so that we can kind of plan our reviews around that.
This is the only comic podcast where you get a little J-Lo reference thrown in there from time to time.
I know. I try to bring something new. Speaking of what comic books you're reading, The Comic Show is sponsored by Uncanny Heroes in Tampa. There are tons of trades and graphic novels coming out this week, specifically this week. I just saw the image from Uncanny Heroes of all the trades that are coming out this week. And every week at Uncanny Heroes in Tampa or Lakeland, graphic novels are 25% off. Uncanny Heroes is located at 12904 North 56th Street in Temple Terrace. Check them out on the web at uncannyheroes.com and like them on Facebook at Uncanny Heroes Tampa. Support your local comic book store, people.
All right, so Matt, we have awesome books to talk about this week, but before we get to that, we have to address the major comic book news that came out last week, and we just missed it. Like, it came out right after we recorded our episode, and that's Bendis. Brian Michael Bendis signing an exclusive contract with DC, man who arguably built the modern-day Marvel foundation.
Oh, man, I feel like you guys give him way too much credit than he deserves. And not that he deserves. Like, he is really, really good, but I don't think he, like, reinvented the genre. I don't think.
No, there was some real fire in our little comics writers chat after this happened, because some of us guys were ranting and raving, and you were telling, you literally were telling us to go sit in the corner and think about what we've been saying.
Well, no, Manny said that he belongs up there next to Stan Lee and, like, Jack Kirby and all the people that created Marvel, Steve Ditko, like, and I'm like, ah, come on, man. Like,
well, Bendis, like, kind of saved Marvel with Ultimate Spider-Man. Like, that was at a time when comics were kind of, they weren't what they used to be, and they didn't get back to where they were now. Like, the mainstream Marvel 616 universe was kind of on the downslope, and the Ultimate Universe really kind of revived things within fans.
Really? Mark Millar did the Ultimates. Bendis did Spider-Man. I mean, I don't think
when people
say they resurrected the Marvel Universe or Marvel Comics with the Ultimates, I find that really hard to believe, because, like, I don't think that was, like, a high-selling... I mean, it was a selling book, but I don't think it was, like, amazingly selling book.
Well, I don't know the sales figures in front of me, but I just mean in terms of fan reception and bringing people into comic books and reading and stuff like that. Ultimate Spider-Man was a huge contributing factor to that. And then obviously the Ultimate Universe kind of went the way of the dinosaur and everyone came back to the 616. But Bendis was the architect. I mean, even though Millar wrote, you know, Ultimates and you had Ultimate X-Men, Bendis was the architect of the Ultimate Universe, which is why when they ended the Ultimate Universe, Scotty Young did that incredible variant of Bendis on the cover dropping the mic, because it was him. So, and again, and then he had his New Avengers, and he had plenty of stuff in the regular 616 as well. He created Jessica Jones. Like, dude had plenty of stuff going for him at Marvel. Granted, I will say this, in recent years, he has taken a major downturn, in my opinion, and I have not been the biggest Bendis fan over the last few years, but there's no denying that his early 2000s work was pretty stellar. I suppose you could deny it.
No, but I'm always a comic book reader, but when I heard about the Ultimates coming out in the Ultimate Universe, I was like, wait, no. I don't need a reboot of my superheroes. I definitely wasn't a fan of it when it came out. When I opened up the comic book stores, when I started reading the Ultimates, and then I'm trying to think if I started reading Ultimate Spider-Man before or after Peter Parker got whacked, because I thought that was a bold move. But I want to say I read it before he got killed off and started reading some of it. I'm not a huge fan of Mark Bagley's artwork.
You're not. You think he's a Todd McFarlane ripoff?
No, I don't. He's not a Todd McFarlane ripoff. He is way, like, you know when you like copy something in a copy machine and then you copy a copy, it starts downgrading in quality. Like whatever, 10 copies later is Mark Bagley compared to Todd McFarlane. I just can't handle it.
I'm a Bagley fan myself. I disagree, but so Bendis was in recent years though. Like I was saying, it's taken a major downturn. The dude cannot stick to continuity to save his life. It drives me nuts. Like, I've read some Bendis books where characters are popping up that are dead. And, like, there are things going on that, you know, Age of Ultron had a ton of continuity errors. His Secret Wars tie-ins had a ton of continuity errors. Like, the dude does not play well in a large sandbox. He doesn't adhere to these rules and stuff. So I'm just wondering how the hell he's going to handle DC over there with their pre-Flashpoint, their New 52, their Rebirth. They're still trying to tie their continuity together, and they just brought in a guy who's, you know, shit the bed on multiple occasions.
And I'm reading, I'm reading right now all the Marvel Ultimates history and stuff. And so Bendis did think that when he was writing the Ultimates, he was writing like the last Marvel Comics book to be published. Like, he thought the place was going to go under at that point in time. And I'm trying to see what the...
You know who that sounds like? And I don't want to... I'm not drawing a direct comparison here, but that sounds like Stan Lee back in the 60s, who was saying, I'm going to be out of a job. I'm quitting, Mark. This company's going nowhere. And then he said, screw it, balls to the wall. And he put out Fantastic Four. I'm not saying that they're on the same level. I'm just saying that's a very similar story right there.
It is. It is. And, I mean, the Ultimate Universe did influence the movie universe for better, for worse. For worse. Not worst. I don't know.
For Worcestershire sauce.
Worcestershire sauce. I mean, we did get Samuel Jackson as Nick Fury because of that. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
And his Ultimate Spider-Man. I mean, Ultimate Spider-Man is the crown jewel of the Ultimate Universe. Like, Millar's Ultimates was good. I won't even say it's great. It was good. But Ultimate Spider-Man, from issue 1 through the last issue with Miles Morales, I thought was a great run. I think when Bendis is in his own sandbox, he's the best. When he has his own characters that he created in his own universe is when he's strongest. And I will say there are exceptions to that. I mentioned that in the chat, and I was immediately called out about his New Avengers comic, which I love his original New Avengers stuff, so there are exceptions to that rule. But I do think his strengths are like Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales, Jessica Jones, like those are his strongest books, in my opinion, and New Avengers.
New Avengers bothers me. It just bothers me.
What doesn't bother you?
What doesn't bother me? What doesn't bother me? The Walking Dead doesn't bother me. I read that comic book and I enjoy that.
That's fair. That's so great. Kirkman doesn't bother you.
Let's not go specific to writers. It's not because they go on emotional spectrums as well. So, I mean, like, I remember Irredeemable Ant-Man. I don't think it was Kirkman's fault, but like the artwork bothered me like that. And then as he was like a peeping Tom in there, which probably is pretty bad now in the current state of Hollywood.
Well, arguably it was pretty bad then too. Just maybe got away with it a little bit more, unfortunately. The book was irredeemable. It was right there in the title.
Yeah, you knew what you were getting into.
You knew what you were getting into.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, guys, I want to know what you think about this whole Bendis book. We got some awesome coverage about it. You know, Manny Gomez put out a cool article about what books, you know, he wants to see Bendis tackle at DC. So tweet at us. Let us know what you think about Bendis and what you want to see him write over there. I think he's going to end up doing something Shazam-related, maybe, since we haven't really seen that, but that's just me.
I was looking at some of these titles, and, like, I see people, like, they were like, oh, you should write Zatanna. And I was like, how many Zatanna fans are out there?
They're out there.
This is going to go my other one. What's the giant dog from The Inhumans?
Lockjaw.
Why is Lockjaw getting a series?
Because marketing. Because the show was out and they just thought it was going to do so well that they were going to have to do a tie-in book.
Oh, man. I don't get it when there's... I go to these conventions and I get it. I like you're a super fan when you go to these conventions and stuff like that. But I'm trying to think of, like, you know, Dan DiDio will be out in the crowd and be like, who wants to see a Plastic Man series? And the whole crowd goes crazy. And I was like, no, there's like five of you that are actually going to buy a Plastic Man book. So people just cheer to cheer at these conventions. And that bothers me.
Sometimes I personally will read the hell out of a Plastic Man book. I can't wait to read it. I mean, I wrote up a little news story this week about how we might be getting a full return of Connor Kent, Superboy, you know, this year, because he kind of got teased in Detective Comics. And then there's an interview out there where the writer, James Tynion, you know, said, oh, well, you know, keep track in December and read these books if you want to see what's going to happen. And I put the article out and I shared it on Reddit and trended like crazy. I mean, like, people were so excited about Connor coming back. So they're out there. There are people out there that want to read these smaller niche characters.
Connor is not a niche character, okay, or niche or quiche or whatever you want to call it. He's got the S on his chest. I mean, like, there's a mythos with that. Like, it isn't like you're like, hey, who wants to see a Dr. Fate book? Like, no, Connor Kent, like, has history, has done some epic shit, like, died in a blaze of glory versus Superboy Prime. Like, he did some All shit. Right. Like, what has Dr. Fate or Plastic Man done? Like, we're in DC Metal right now. You know what Plastic Man is doing? Nothing.
Oh, he's going to, though. Once when he comes out of that silly putty egg, oh, just wait. All right. Well, let's get to some books. Let's get to some reviews that made you really sad. As soon as I said that, your face just, like, dropped. Like I could see the depression just wash over you.
This was the saddest week of books ever, and I, like, it's just depressing. So depressing.
So I'm really curious as to why. So, okay, we're going to start off with Moon Knight issue 188. Came out last week, written by Max Bemis, art by Jason Burrows, and colors by Matt Lopez. So what was depressing about this book? This was like an action, trippy, weird thing.
Okay, we're going to have spoilers coming up right now. So if you haven't read this Moon Knight book, there's going to be spoilers after this point in time. I'm going to say spoiler three times, and then that's going when spoilers are going to happen. So spoiler. Spoiler, spoiler. All right. Why is this book depressing?
Besides the fact that there was, like, no Moon Knight in the Moon Knight comic, yes.
Okay.
Why?
So the character, the main character in this story, the psychologist in this, that's going through all of this story, and it's kind of like, you know, very heavy, very thoughtful, like you're thinking with the psychologist and stuff like that. And you're going through the problems, and you're also, if like, you're also thinking, like, hey, how's Moon Knight going to fold into this story? Because he never really shows up into it. And so you bond with this character, and, you know, because she goes to dinner with her douchebag friends, and, you know, she's drinking Folgers coffee, which I don't know who drinks Folgers coffee. Like, Keurigs are out there now, so you can drink Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks, or maybe they just didn't want to give Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts the street cred. But instead they gave Folgers, and then she gets burned to a crisp, and she's just like, got no eye, got no hair, her body's all melted, and she's somehow alive. How is that not depressing?
Oh, it's dark as shit. Don't get me wrong. This is a dark comic book. I just didn't feel depressed when reading it. Like
you
Mr.
have
Miracle
no
is a
soul.
Depressing comic.
You have no soul.
I do know, like, Mr. Miracle is a depressing comic. Like, that's a comic, you know, you got existentialism and a bunch of, like, you know, really sad things going on in that book. This has some really darkness in it, believe me, but it didn't, when she was burned to a crisp, it didn't, like, I don't know, maybe quote unquote depressed has to, like, strike a different chord within me, like Mr. Miracle does or something. I don't know. I mean, it was dark. Don't get me wrong.
She's never going to practice medicine again. And, like, her whole career is over with. And Marvel will probably go the douchebag route and make her evil.
Oh, I don't think we're ever seeing her again.
Oh, you think she's done?
Yeah, no, I think she was just to introduce us to this world and, you know, kind of fill us in on this mysterious patient
so
that turns out.
She doesn't even get a chance to come back. She's done. Doesn't get more depressing than that.
Yeah. I think so. I don't know. I thought it was incredible that they had such a cool, trippy Moon Knight comic without Moon Knight, other than that one, you know, splash page that was a dream sequence. I very bold move right out the gate, first issue of this new Moon Knight series, no Moon Knight. Super bold move and could have gone really wrong, but I still think that they really conveyed what this series is going to be about really well. And I love the art, like the art by Jason Burroughs. It was really cool. It actually reminded me a lot of Declan Shalvey, who I love, and who worked on Moon Knight previously. And there's a little bit of Shalvey in Burroughs' art here, and I really liked it. That splash page that I mentioned of the one time that Moon Knight appears was print worthy, in my opinion. So that panel. Speaking of things that maybe this book is depressing, that panel of the patient in the straitjacket with blood all over and the symbols all over his room. That's haunting. Again, dark, haunting, not depressing.
So I know Jason Burroughs from his work on Crossed, the Garth Ennis zombie rape fest, rage, disgusting book that it is. So to see this in Moon Knight, I was automatically like, I saw the work and like the way he does faces and the Jesus looking guy right away. Like I automatically saw Crossed in it and I was like, oh, and then when you get to that last panel where not the last panel, but when he's like doing all the blood and he's in the room and he's all cut up. Like that image right there is directly from Crossed. And so he can draw like evil, maniacal, like stuff like crazy. But there's so much baggage with the disgusting shit that he drew in Crossed that when I saw that it was him, I was like totally turned off because that's what he does. Like he draws evil really, really well. And that's all I saw was evil.
And that's what it was. I mean, that guy was evil incarnate. Like you saw the destruction that he rained. It made you depressed.
But you know, it's funny because like there's the panel with the flames where he's like having like a flashback about family and stuff like that.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's the coloring of it or the way it's set up. I can't stand it. Like I really can't stand like the flames and like what's going on with it and basically all the flame stuff I'm not a huge fan of. But you go to the all white Moon Knight stuff where you have like Moon Knight and like you said, the print worthiness of that one panel, the stitching on the mummies, like everything looks so crisp and it's colored so well. It's beautiful. So it's because I think it's because there's no real faces in it. I think that could be it.
Maybe. All I know is when I was so looking forward to this because Moon Knight's been on a hot streak recently. I mean, between Warren Ellis's run and Jeff Lemire's run, I could not wait for this. All I want from a Moon Knight book is something that's trippy and weird, something that I'm not fully going to understand and that's going to keep me hooked so that I can see how it plays out and try to figure out like a puzzle more or less. And this book gave it to me. This single issue gave it to me because this whole comic was a puzzle. And then seeing how this plays out is going to be a puzzle. So that's what I want from a Moon Knight book. I want this crazy, trippy ride that I don't really fully understand. And I got that. And if you want something like that in a comic, then I think that this is going to pay off.
I get why you like this book. I'm just not a fan. Like, I'm just straight up like, people have always like, Moon Knight's the best, Moon Knight's the best. And I was like, I don't know about that. Like, it's, again, it's just one of those things where I think Moon Knight is in those characters of like, it has a super niche group of fans and you guys can love whatever you want. That's fine. He's never really been involved in any part of the Marvel universe in a big way. You know, I remember there's a few times where I think he might have been in Spider-Man where Spider-Man's like, hey, I'm going to put this like really random ass team together. But he's still like, his personality's never really come across in the mainstream area. So he's always been in this like little corner, and Moon Knight fans have always been like super passionate about the book. All five of you people. I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, he's popped up. He's popped up in Spider-Man, but that's what I love about him too, is that he stays in his own little corner. Like, he's not a character that gets sucked into the Civil Wars and the Secret Empires. And, you know, we have so much crossover and so many, like, you know, marketing ploys where all these books weave together, and, you know, then a big event happens and everything stops and all these other books tie into it. Moon Knight has always been its own thing. You know, he's kind of stays to himself. And if you're looking just for a good superhero comic that you don't have to worry about reading 20 other comics to keep up with it, he's the perfect character for that.
He's probably the closest to any possibility of like a Vertigo character for Marvel.
I totally am down with that comparison. Yeah. Like, I could see him as like a Vertigo, kind of like a Swamp Thing or a Sandman kind of character. Yeah, I am totally on board with that.
Because he rattled off some really good names of writers. And again, you know, people are like, oh, this is the best thing ever. It's kind of like Tom King's Vision. You're like, oh, it's the Vision. I was like, why do I want to read about the Vision? It's weird. Like, I watched Walking Dead last night, and like, there was a huge episode with Ezekiel. And I was like, I really don't care about this character at all. I just don't. Like, I have the characters on The Walking Dead that I like, and they've introduced some new ones, and I'm just like, yeah, I got no more room in my heart for you.
Did he die? Did Ezekiel die last night? Spoiler alert, I don't watch The Walking Dead, but did he die?
Ezekiel did not die last night.
Someone died though, right?
Someone did die.
All right. I don't watch the show. Sorry, I don't read the comic either. I know I need to catch up on The Walking Dead, but I did hear that somebody died.
Yeah, at some point in time, we're gonna have to review The Walking Dead because it is a comic book.
That's fine. I have read Walking Dead comics. I read the first four volumes of it. I've read some stuff since then, here and there. I just haven't consistently read it. I could hold my own on it though. Hold on, come back to Moon Knight, because I'm flipping through my comic right here. I love the coloring in this book. I love the psychiatrist being a redhead, kind of echoing the, you know, the flames and the red that's going to come later in the book that's going to haunt her. But I really love the use of white in a Moon Knight book. And maybe that's the reason why I gravitate towards Moon Knight, is I love colorists that kind of play with white, because white could stand for so many things. It could stand for purity or blankness, or there's so much that you could do with nothing, essentially. And the few panels in here, the dream sequence, you get a lot of white, especially you see a lot of like the empty paintings on the walls behind the psychiatrist. There's a lot of really good imagery in those two pages. And I hope we see some more interesting uses of that moving forward when Moon Knight becomes more fully integrated in this book.
No, there's definitely, I love, because if you're watching or if you're reading a book digitally, I love just scrolling through a book quickly to see how the pages are colored, to see if there is any meaning in the colors of what's going on or the transitions of it. And like you said, there's the white page, there's the oranges when he's on fire, and then there's the panels when she's at the museum, and it's got more of an orange tint, and there's like kind of like a vintage look in certain panels when they're talking, and then everything is kind of outlined in black borders. So it's a well-colored book. I would like to say that Matt Lopes did a good job.
So Lopes, I thought it was Lopez.
Well, I haven't met Matt.
Neither do I. One way or the other, he did a good job. I love that, though, too, what you were saying about scrolling through and just getting a sense of the palette. Have you seen online people who, like, take a movie and they take, like, every still from the movie and they kind of condense it into, like, a spectrum?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's kind of that feeling. I'd love for someone to do that with a comic book, just to get a good sense of the palette. Anyway,
Matt is from Brazil, so it is probably Matt Lopez.
2 points for me.
What? You didn't research it?
No,
I did the fact checking.
Yeah, but I was right. Probably.
He's also working on Batgirl and Gasolina, like Carolina.
Oh, at Image, yeah.
And Moon Knight, that's what he has right there. And he's from Brazil.
Brazil. I am giving this book 4.3 monkeys.
4.3?
4.3 monkeys. I almost said stars, but it's monkeys.
This is an above average book, just on storytelling alone, just the whole narrative of the self-contained kind of issue. It is leading on to bigger things. There were some good things in the art. There were some not so good things in the art. The coloring is really good. It's a solid 4 robots.
The Batman Who Laughs is written by James Tynion IV with art by Riley Rossmo, colors by Ivan Placencia, and letters by Tom Nobledano.
Why'd you make me read this so depressing book, man?
Because we have been following this whole Dark Knights metal saga. We've been talking about the Dark Knights, and this is the last one. This is the one we've been waiting for since we started reading these Dark Knights tie-ins. This is the one that we wanted.
This one?
Is the leader. This is the Dark Knight that everyone... This is the leader of the Dark Knights. This is the guy that brought them all together. Well, Barbados brought them together, arguably, but this is still... He's the leader of the Dark Knights. He's the worst of the worst.
He is the worst of the worst. It was funny. In our little comic book chat, I was like, how do you pronounce Barbados? And everybody kind of chimed in. And I was like the island? Like, yes. And I was like, hi. You know? He's got the worst name for a villain.
Blame Grant Morrison.
No. I did some heavy, heavy research on Barbados. And he was brought up in the... early 90s, like Batman Dark City, like a 2-issue run. And then he's brought up way before then on that. So he's been around for a while. And, you know, I guess Grant Morrison took advantage of him. And then Snyder totally took advantage of him and created this whole universe here. But, like, I like when they're bringing back. I like when they, like, dig deep into the archives of, like, villains and they find some good stuff to expand on. I think that's when, like, I'm most excited about creativity in comic books.
Yeah, that's why I've really been enjoying metal as a whole. So I've been waiting for this Batman Who Laughs comic. I've been enjoying all the Dark Knights books, but this is the one I've been wanting, and it really did not disappoint. And I'm a big fan of James Tynion's writing. I think he's doing an excellent job on Detective. He's up there, you know, as one of the best Batman writers today. Like, you know, it's been Snyder and Tynion side by side for years already. But before we get to the story and the writing, I just want to make a comment on the art here, because I love what they did with this book. Like, the Joker that we see in the beginning is from the cartoons. Like, that is the new Batman Adventures, like the JLU Joker. Like, he just, I have like the whole animated Batman action figures. I've been collecting them. And as I'm reading it, I'm like, this looks familiar. And I look over on my shelf at my Joker action figure and I'm like, yeah, that's it. That's who I'm reading right now. Like, they mimicked it. And not only that, but as you're reading later, you know, we see dead Wonder Woman on the floor. That's Darwin Cook's Wonder Woman. Like, I'm 95% sure that that's Darwin Cook's Wonder Woman right there. Like, so I love that they took these, like, classic kind of style characters and used them for the darkest of the Dark Knight stories. Amazing choice in my mind.
I do like how they explained the Joker Robins. That was interesting. The artwork is phenomenal in this book. And so you're saying that this is the Joker from the Batman the Animated Series?
It looks like him to me. It looks even maybe more from like JLU, kind of, because, you know, he's gone through his stages. But yeah, this kind of looks like the Joker from the Justice League Unlimited series.
The first the first panel, like the first panel that you see the Joker, I was like, oh, I thought it was Justice League. I thought it was like from the Batman animated series as well. I was like, oh, this is cool. But then like the farther you get away from it, the more I'm like, okay, this is kind of like a little different than him. I mean, it could be influenced by it. I mean, like, you can see what you want to see in the comic. I'm not judging you on this. I'm just emotionally...
the costume is 100%. Like the suit is 100% as he wore it in the cartoons. But granted, that's also the Joker's suit, you know, purple suit, green shirt, like that's kind of his staple. So doesn't have to be from the show, but it is what he wore in the show.
I'm just, the carnage in this book is just insane. Like insane. Oh, so insane.
So good. I'll even give you depressing on this one. I wouldn't give you depressing on Moon Knight, but I'll give you depressing on this one. Any book that has a panel of Batman, you know, just like laying waste to people, I'll put that in the depressing column, especially considering who he was laying waste to.
And then the horror aspect of the book is just insane because of what happens off panel that they don't show you as Superman rips apart his wife and kid. Like, come on, man.
Oh, that was brutal. And that's the moment too. You could tell from the lettering and the art choice of, you know, the speech balloon kind of shifting over to the dark side. Like, that's the moment that he truly becomes like the Batman who laughs. Oh, that was crazy.
It was, yeah, no, this is just a god awful tale. And
Damian, oh,
he's a jerk. He totally gets it. He's one that would totally go over to the dark side as quickly as possible.
Well, that's what he says, too. He says it only took a little push, and he did it to himself. Like, he definitely volunteered.
Who is the person bandaged up?
I don't know. And, like, that's what I'm really curious about. Like, and I love how all these books are tying together. Like, none of them really feel like, you know, throwaway marketing ploys. Like, all of these tie-ins feel essential to the main story, because now I need to know who that guy is in the bandages. These are all integral to the overall metal story, and I love it. Like, I don't know. Who do you think it could be?
Well, it's in a wheelchair, and I don't know if that's the whole, like, if they were in a wheelchair before or after they got... Part of me is leaning towards the Joker. I don't know. Like, part of me was like, is that Barbara Gordon? And he's just re-torturing Barbara Gordon again. And other part of it, now that I see, like, it's more of an insane asylum suit, I'm like, is that the Joker?
You know what? I would love it if it was the Joker, because this is a massive Batman event and we haven't seen him yet. So I would love to see if this is where he was and kind of if the Batman who laughs had to take him off the table, kind of. Because only the Joker could do that to another Joker, right? So it would make sense. But we do have that one panel where you kind of see his eyes through the bandages, and it doesn't look, you know, white and made up to me.
No, it looks and it looks younger. That's where I was like, it looks younger and possibly female in the eyes.
Oh man, I mean, it could be Alfred. It could be a number of.
And the face is kind of small, like rounded. If it was the Joker, it would be a little bit pointier.
Yeah.
In that, but then the person has kind of like man hands, so I'm thinking it's more of a guy than a girl. I was a huge fan of all the close-ups, because the detail and the artwork is really impressive. Like the Joker Batman hands, you know, are all gargoyled and brutal, and just the, you know, always bleeding mouth. Like the details are really brilliant in it. I wanted them to kind of explain the spikes, and we didn't get that. So I'm still left with questions.
I mean, what's to explain? It's just kind of metal and twisted.
Well, how do you see?
That's just Greg Capullo letting his, like, inner rock god out.
Really?
Yeah, man. I mean, all of the Dark Knights are like, have crazy designs to them and stuff. And this is the sick, twisted BDSM Batman who wears leather and brings Robins around on chains.
I get that. I'm just, you know, they have the panel where he kills Batman, and there's Carol's Superman. And, like, the costume has changed a little bit where the Batman symbol is green and he's got the Joker smile. And then you just go straight into this, you know, leathered up chains Batman holding a gun and just more of a crazier look, and it just, you know, I wanted a little bit of a transition.
So I've been loving these Dark Knights books because they all have been, I mean, the whole Dark Knights Metal premise as a whole is exploring Batman's flaws, right? And like everything that he's always been afraid of, you know, trusting people, you know, that's been explored in these Dark Knights, and they're all kind of embodiments of his greatest fears and greatest weaknesses. And it was interesting to me because this one was, you know, his last line, like, I will not kill. And he did. He killed the Joker. And I was like, oh, cool. So this is like the bad choice he made was killing the Joker, which was the line that he swore he would never cross because he'd never come back from it. And that wasn't really what did it, though, right? Because even he says, it's just like, I'm not going to go down that dark path. Like, I'm fine. I'm glad I killed him, blah, blah, blah. And it's not like it wasn't his psychology that broke. It was like just one last Joker prank. It was physical. You know, he poisoned him with Joker toxin or whatever it was. It wasn't like, you know, he slowly deteriorated into his mind as to the point where, like, it didn't prove his point. It didn't prove that if he crossed that line, he wouldn't be able to stop killing people. It just showed that the Joker just, you know, poisoned him more or less. I don't know if that cheapens it or, you know, I think it might have been cooler if he went down that road on his own, might have said more about him. But I guess it also probably would have answered, you know, the age old question of whether or not, you know, he should or should not kill the Joker. But
I don't think it cheapened it. I thought it was it's kind of like when you make those decisions, there are consequences. And this was one of the consequences on this earth.
Yeah. I'm not saying that it did cheapen it. I was just kind of, you know, going back and forth in my mind. I was playing devil's advocate to myself, more or less. And I do like that point.
And then also, has the other books been in the Dark Universe, or has the characters been found in the New 52 and then brought to the Dark Universe?
What do you mean? I don't get it.
Well, this Batman, he's from Earth 22.
Negative 22.
Oh, negative. Okay, I missed the negative 22. I'm sorry. Then my question is answered. Just by reading it.
Yeah, no, all of the Dark Knights tie-ins have all, you know, kind of jumped back and forth between, you know, the negative world origin story and then showed them in, you know, in Earth Zero.
Right, no, and that's fine. I just was like, I thought this was the first one that was just in Earth, like, on this side, and then they brought him over to the upside down world.
The upside down?
Yeah, the upside down.
Watching too much Stranger Things?
Yeah.
Just the justice for Barb.
Oh, man. But this book's really good.
It is. Highly recommend it. Like, this is the DC book to pick up this week, man. Like,
the artwork, the story, just the raw carnage in it is just brutal to the umpteenth degree.
Yeah, I'll go as far as to say, even if you haven't been reading any metal books, which you should be because we've been telling you to for months already, but if you haven't read any metal books, I would still just pick this up because on its own, as a standalone Elseworlds story, I think you'll find it enjoying. And if nothing else, it'll, you know, make people go back and catch up on metal.
Yeah, no, I think this will make people read metal if you haven't read metal. Like, if you're, I mean, I can't see you not being a Batman fan. And then I'm trying to figure out why you wouldn't be reading Dark Knight Metal if you weren't a Batman fan already. Like, I just don't get it.
Well, I get that. I get that people have like event fatigue and stuff like that, and they, you know, are kind of tired of the endless, you know, parade of crossovers and tie-ins and stuff like that. But I've been saying it. This does not feel like a cheap event to me. You know, everything feels earned and has weight, and it really feels like they're trying to do right by the fans on this. So, but you know, so if you were worried about getting invested in metal, just pick up this one tie-in. It'll sell you, I promise you. And then tweet me and tell me that you did it, so that I feel good about myself.
And I did a video after the last Batman Dark Knights Metal tie-in book because Snyder at that point in time basically deconstructed Batman in the current universe. Like, he is gone. He is a shell of that person, and he's pushed to the brink like all these other Batmen. And it's like, is he going to come back, or is there a Batman going to come from a different universe to come in? Like, I'm thinking that the Grant Morrison Batman is from the old 52 or whatever, the pre-Flashpoint Batman is going to come in and save the day, because there's that one panel where they show all the Batman in there, and they're all just like hollow. but
yeah,
this,
you were gung ho after you read that. You were like, "Is old school Batman coming back to save the day?" And we're like, "No, Matt, it's not."
What the fuck was that?
That was just me telling the truth. You were so excited. You read Batman Lost.
I wasn't. I love theorizing about books. And I like went through and I looked at other Reddit posts and other theories on it. And I was like, well, you know, this is kind of a, this is kind of a Grant Morrison tie-in book. And there are some, Grant Morrison just went all over the place with Batman, but he was very neurotic about how neurotic Batman was to prepare for all types of situations. And there's one time where he's buried and he's like, okay, this is how much you have to bench to dig yourself out from 22 feet deep of dirt and this and that. And he's like, I know exactly how much I need to work. And I was just like, he went through all the things and how much pressure you need to apply to the wood to break it and all this other stuff. And I was like, oh shit, this is like Batman at like the Batman's most like Batman point where he's just like, because Batman's neurotic. He's a detective. They're always figuring out things and that's what he is. And there was like that one scene and if that neurotic Batman comes in, he'll kind of be able to figure this out. Because reading Lost and the other books, I think it was Lost, you can see how the Justice League is kind of faltering because they don't have that kind of like commander type person to kind of figure out where the plans are going.
You were setting me up for an okay, good for you. And then you went a different, I was like, so I got so excited. Because you started talking, I was like, "Oh, this is it! This is my moment!" And then you kind of derailed, and I couldn't pull it off at the end there. So, yeah, I'm a little bit now I'm depressed, to be honest.
But no, I put a video out of me just rambling about Batman and Dark Knight's Metal, and Comic Book Boom, he chimed in, and he wasn't a fan of Snyder's run on Batman. And I can understand everybody's got opinions. Everybody's got their different Batmans that they like. But he's not a big fan of it. But now rereading it and see how it sets up Metal, he's like a huge fan of it now.
Yeah. Well, not even that it's set up Metal. I love the fact that he's going back and tying all these things together after the fact. And you know, way back to Detective Comics 27, like Batman's first appearance, like he's just orchestrating this massive, you know, web that he's, you know, just weaving together. But I'm glad that people, it's turning people around. I'm glad that it's getting people, you know, on board with things that they weren't on board with previously, myself included. I've been vocal that I'm not the biggest Grant Morrison fan and that his Batman wasn't, you know, my favorite, but reading Metal, it has inspired me myself to, you know, go back and give it a second look. So I'm in that camp as well. And any comic that inspires you to read more and go back and, you know, take a look at things that maybe you didn't previously enjoy or kind of dig into some history. I'm really in support of that. Like I love art that inspires, you know, additional art.
Good for you.
Oh,
what are you grading this book?
4.5.
I'm doing a 4.25 robots, my friend.
Good for you.
Good for you. Hi, Anthony. We got a really exciting week of books. I will talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Once again, there's several ways to continue the conversation after the show. Follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots. You can look at all our silly photos on Instagram at monkeysfightingrobots. You can follow me on Twitter at Matthew Sardo. My co-host Anthony is also on Twitter at the_great_ace. The biggest compliment we receive is when the subscriber number goes up on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a chance, we'd greatly appreciate a review of our show on iTunes. As always, the best way to listen to the show is on our website, monkeysfightingrobots.com.
Well, that was fun. Who's for Chinese?
There are so many people that made the 20th episode of the comic show on Monkeys Fighting Robots a success. Go check out Uncanny Heroes in Tampa, people! And a very special shout-out to my co-host, Anthony Composta.
You gotta be one of the good guys. Because there's way too many of the bad.
Shit's getting deep. Shit is getting deep. Jessica Wynn designed the Monkeys Fighting Robots logo. Are you a monkey? Are you a robot? Staff at Visual Realm built our website and keeps us up running. To all my friends, family, and the interweb, thank you very much for your support. I'm Matt Sardo, and this is Monkeys Fighting Robots.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.